Welcome to Flyover Conservative Podcast with David and Stacey Whited, where we break down current events and examine culture through the lens of conservative Christian values.
I think over the last 3 or 4 years, people have felt in a non-organic shift in our nation. This feeling of major uprising, protests, buildings burned, ideology being contested, a shift of the mindsets of those most affected by our school system, originally in the college level and then the high school, and now as early as kindergarten, the indoctrination of ideas and principles that are very anti-America. Mm-hmm. You know, we would sit back and think often, how can a country survive when it's being trained against the ideas that its own nation was founded on? You know, I don't think any family or country or business could ever survive with that kind of indoctrination.
So true.
And it feels like, is this organic? Is this happening naturally? Or is this being injected from the outside? A lot of people feel like they're maybe playing with a fire and don't know the consequences of this. And ideas that are standing as if they're fresh and new, but they have been tested over and over on different populations, different nations, different mm-hmm. cultures throughout history. And oftentimes we're sort of blackballed from those ideas and never trained on the consequences of what does history have to tell us. Sometimes you study history and you think that happened, but what really happened in that moment? Mm-hmm. Very rarely do you get to sit down and speak with someone who was there firsthand, saw not only an uprising, but saw the debris, death, and destruction that was caused by it. I'm incredibly honored today to have the author of Mao's America, A Survivor's Warning. And I think in that subtitle, A Survivor's Warning. Mm-hmm. I think there's a warning we all need to heed today. And we get to speak firsthand with Ms. G. Van Fleet.
Yay!
Well, thank you for inviting me. And you said a lot in the introduction, a lot to unpack just there.
So true.
I have to just say, you said it's inorganic. People just shocked. What happened to our country? What happened to my hometown, to my school? It's almost overnight, I think, for a lot of people, 2020. But here you said just wonderful things. And why wasn't I not surprised?
Right.
Because I saw it, right? I saw it before. I lived through it before. And that's the power of knowing real history.
Yes.
In fact, you were, I believe, 7 years old when this cultural revolution began in China. Can you fill in our listeners about kind of your life and how that affected you? I think it was started in 1966. Is that right?
Yes.
And I guess maybe even framing that question, what did the nation of China look like maybe the decade or two decades previous to that? You know, what led up to that moment in Chinese history that made that necessary to create a cultural revolution?
Yeah, it's a long history. I make it short. China before a cultural revolution was a communist country. China after the Cultural Revolution is a worse-off communist country. And so there's a lot of political campaign that took place before the Cultural Revolution that led to the mother of all revolution in China, the Cultural Revolution. So for that, we have to go back a little bit further back to the late 50s. And Mao, after launching so many destructive policies, he started this campaign called the Great Leap Forward. And he felt like he could just mobilize the back then, it's 600 million Chinese, just to do one thing, to make steel so that China can surpass UK and the United States in 15 years. Why steel? Why not just, you know, other things to improve people's lives? Of course, it's not about people. It's about power. It's about, you know, having steel so that it can make weapons. So everyone, kids, peasants, workers, cadre, even soldiers, were all mobilized to do one thing, making steel in the backyard. So, and then that failed. Of course that failed. And also failed was the crops, because no one was attending the crops in the countryside. So that resulted in the famine, the Great Famine, that lasted 3 years, killed up to 50 million people.
Wow.
And because of that, even for Mao, that was a big mistake. And people noticed, and the leadership noticed it. So they absolutely feel like this has to be corrected.
But also great branding. The Great Leap Forward, or, you know, sounds really good, but then they're starting to look around and think it's not great, and we're not moving forward. But a lot of these ideologies are packaged with really good marketing and a good title.
That is always the key of communism. They can kill with a kindest word that you can imagine. Yeah. So the result is that Mao had to take a back seat, and someone else, which was the president of China, Liu Shaoqi, was taking charge. And as a dictator, he could not accept that. That's something like dictators would not tolerate. So he spent a few years from 1962 to 1966, 4 years basically, planning a comeback, that is Cultural Revolution. So people need to understand that the whole thing about the Cultural Revolution was seize power. The power from what? Power from the CCP. So Mao was launching a cultural revolution against his own government, against his own party, for the one reason, the reason alone, to get power back. And this time he had a new army. It's not the military. It's not the soldiers. He had tens of millions of Red Guards that at his disposal. Those were the young, educated students from elementary school all the way to college and universities. The Red Guards carried out his cultural revolution. I think people, if you pay attention, the same parallel is going on in America today.
No doubt about it. And as Colton was playing that earlier, we saw like this book that was in their hand, like right there, this book that's in their hand, this red book. What was that?
Yeah, that. So the other thing I really want to drill to people's mind, communism is not an economic system. Communism is a religion. And so Maoism, which is a very extreme version, radical version of communism, is a religion. So the red little book basically is our Bible. And it's just quotations from Mao's different works. The words he said, most of it out of context and make no sense when you read it. But it doesn't matter. That's our little Bible. And we have a God, which was Mao. And we have all the rituals. The rituals, look at the people right now. And as a young girl, every day, my mother and got us together, and we have a portrait. We don't have portrait of anything. We don't have pictures of anything at home, but we have plenty of Mao's pictures. Mm-hmm. And we would have the little red book, and every morning we would greet our God and use his little red book and say, you know, today we're going to start a day and we're going to follow your instruction. At night before going to bed, we have to do the same ritual. We have to say what we did today, which one we did well, which one we didn't. We didn't because we did not follow your instruction. Every day we do that. And every day, millions of Chinese did that. And so it's a religion. Woke is also a religion, because woke is a new version of the Marxism and communism.
So, how do you go, sorry, I just have to ask, how do people go from starving, possibly up to 50 million people dying, to in a few short years, looking at that same person that caused all these deaths as a god?
Thank you. Such a great question. How could he mobilize all the people? At first, it's just the kids, but eventually all the people got involved, everyone. This is so important to know. Why?
Yeah.
Because Mao said, all the problem you had was done by the communist cadres, the new ruling class. Oh. See the tricks. Oh my God, do they hate those ruling new ruling class, every one of them. That's why they were able to mobilize the people that already had all this grievances and hatred towards the party. So Mao said, now go after them, get them out of power. And that's how he mobilized the entire population, go after his political enemy, which is basically the entire government bureaucrat and the entire party, Communist Wow. Party of China.
So I'm going to try to make sure I'm understanding this picture. So previous to 1966, there had been a decade, two decades, maybe more of this idea of this great leap forward. And they're seizing land from farmers and landowners. So they're basically working
their own land,
but as a part of the communist collective on these farms. It's this idea of you'll own nothing and be happy. You know, basically nobody was owning anything. They're anti-capitalism and everything that looked Western. And so the shift then said, hey, this isn't working. It's not my fault. It's everybody that's not doing it right that looks Western. It's Western capitalism, Western imperialism, that's the enemy. And so he took all of that rage and frustration and the sort of disappointment of empty promises. And there's these generations, to say people then that are like 30 to 60 years old, you know, that are probably very frustrated and maybe speaking against him and what's happening, and indoctrinated this younger group then against everybody that was speaking against him and saying basically things are not good in our country because they're not doing it my way. And if we did it my way and you followed my instructions, all of this pain would go away. I'm the answer to your frustration. My red book has the answer to all of your problems, even though he caused them.
I feel you, pain. That's what it is. Because, you know, I have to go back a little bit further. And so how did the Communist Party succeed in China? With one slogan, you know, that's very simple. Down with the landowners and divide their land. That's it. 打土豪分田地. That's it. That's how they won the 90% of the Chinese population, which were peasants. They want land. So they supported the revolution. And after that, 1994, after the communists took over power, they gave land. They seized the land from the landowners and gave to the peasants. In the process, 2 million landowners were killed. Their only crime was wealth, that they own land. Okay, so they gave land to the peasants. Peasants were all overjoyed. Great, now we got what we wanted. Only 4 years later, that was the time that he launched the Great Leap Forward. He also launched the collective farming. All the land were now collectivized by the state. No, not by the state, by the people. Now the land owned by the people. So you don't have to have your little plot. He has his little plot. Now we all put it together. Now all of us own it. People's land, which is, of course, we know it's state. So that's a process that they lost everything. And then the Great Leap Forward starved 50 million of them to death. But the problem is, Mao said, it's all those little cadres in your village, the village leaders, the county leaders, the township leaders. They are the problem. They made all this, they are responsible for the disasters. That's always what they do. The communists, they always divide people and sit people against each other. And that's all this eventually led to the Cultural Revolution. So Cultural Revolution was a revolution for Mao to seize the power back from his own party, from his own government, using the people. The young people is one thing. The young people is easy to control. Just say, follow me. We have to get rid of those people in power because they want to take us back to capitalism. Those kids, What is capitalism? They have no clue. They never saw anything, right? And then he also mobilized the masses because the masses were victims of his policy, but he blamed the failure of his policy to the people who carry out his policy. And that's, I hope people can understand somewhat of what I'm trying to tell. It's such a complicated situation, but one thing is very clear. It's power for power. And also, a cultural revolution is mainly a youth revolution. It's Mao really mobilized the young people that were, he had 17 years to indoctrinate. Those kids knew nothing, including me. I was seven. You say capitalism was evil. I would say yes. I have no clue what capitalism was, but if you say it's evil, it must be evil. And then we are going to stop all those people in power because they want to take us back to capitalism.
So controlling the messaging, propaganda being used. I'm not an expert on this, but there's stories of Mao marketing himself as a world-class swimmer. You know, he swam the river 9 miles wide, you know, which would have been a world record pace.
It's like 65 minutes or something like
that. Yeah. And so so the people really began to believe like, oh, he's, you know, great. But he really controlled this messaging of he's the answer. Everyone else is the problem. He was this great physical specimen, you know, as well beyond what was real. So you're at 7 years old. What's the first memory you have of it was a sort of green light go messaging? He'd built up this army, but it was sort of under control. In one day, basically, it's unleashed. What's your first memory of that change?
Let me tell you, it's more complicated than that. Who made Mao a godlike figure? It's the CCP. All those bureaucrats, all those people in power that Mao want to unseat, those were the people that helped to make him godlike figure. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So the people that he want to destroy were the people who were responsible for making him a god. And this is the story of communism. For me, I knew nothing when I was when I was in the kindergarten, we have an evaluation, like a report card every year. My father kept them, and I have them. Just not too long ago, I went through them, and there is an evaluation for me when I was only four in kindergarten or preschool. I don't know exactly how. Yeah, but anyway, it said me as a four-year-old. There was one section called a moral development that I was a good kid. I understood that Mao was our great leader, and Mao loved his little children. And I was his little good child.
Wow.
And so, you know, it's like, we sing songs from very young age that Mao was our real father. The party was our real parents. And so it's the indoctrination is you cannot even imagine. Well, I guess you can. Nowadays, we don't know what is a woman, you know.
So right.
That's the kind of indoctrination. I believe that. I believe Mao, if I have to choose between my parent and Mao, absolutely. Not the slightest doubt, Mao. Wow. I choose Mao. And everyone and all the other kids were thinking the same way.
Wow. Okay, so then at age seven, that was 1966, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, age seven, This cultural revolution starts and it goes for 10 years until Mao dies. Is that right?
Yes.
What did those 10 years look like? And was it just a one day it just started? You show up at school and everything's different.
That's my memory. It's like just overnight. Of course it's not. And it took a little while to get there, but it did not take that long. Mao launched the revolution in the cultural revolution. There's an official launch date. It's May. And May 16th, because they made official announcement that we're going to carry out a cultural revolution. And the goal is to get rid of those people that got themselves into the party, got themselves in power of in position of power, who try to drag us back to capitalism. And so that, so there is a launching date. And then eventually the Red Guards were mobilized. And, but to me, it was overnight because I was too little to really understand all these things that are already going on in the state media and the radio, you know, papers. But to me, just one day. And so there was a, writing on the wall. The blackboard said that, you know, there's no school for 3 days. And eventually it lasted for 2 years. And at the same time, I saw older kids got the principals and teachers into struggle session. And so there was actually all ousted. There's no one running the school. And so eventually, yeah, I realized there's no school. And so all the kids, we had nothing to do. So every day we went to the street. So I said that I did not participate, but I had the front seat watching the whole Cultural Revolution unfolding in front of our eyes.
Wow.
And of course, what I saw is what's going on here today in America. They destroy anything that's old. They call it old, for old culture, old ideas, old custom, and old habits. Anything old, including statues, including books, anything that has to be destroyed. And so after they finish what they can find in the public space, like temples and churches and whatever, they say, well, there are more. They were hidden in people's homes. So they went to people's homes and got those things out. And I witnessed them. The Red Guards go to people's homes, get everything that they thought were one of those four O's, like pictures, furniture, whatever. Drag them out, smash them, and so that's called the culture, the Chinese cancel culture.
Yeah, no kidding.
Communism and Marxism is very good at destroying something, but not very good at building something.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
You know, and so. What did all you said the four olds? Let's highlight that just again, because it's very important, I think, because there's this idea if you it's almost like they look at these things like cancer spots. Let's just cut out all of the cancer, but eventually there's nothing left of the person. You know, yeah. You can do is cut. All you can do is cut, but it's not health.
So it's a old culture,
okay,
old ideas, old custom. And old habits. It is, in one word, Chinese civilization. It is anything in the past. So you can use another term. It's tradition and the past including history. Everything has to go. We don't need past. We only need to look forward. Remember, Obama's slogan is a change that we can believe. And forward, he used this as a slogan, forward. The communists, Marxists, they don't like the past because past is tradition that has been mostly proven working. And they want us to forget it. They only want us to focus the progress, the change. And so it's the same thing. It's really the same thing.
Can you explain to the best that you can for people, because most people in America and probably the world, probably even in China today, have never studied this section of history. It's sort of blacked out. What is a struggle session?
Yeah. Struggle. Okay. So first of all, you know, they get rid of ideas and get off stuff like statues, like, you know, books. And then they have to get rid of the people. So who are those people? The people that have this wrong thoughts, the bourgeois thoughts. So first, they got all those people that were classified as the black class. And I say that quite a bit. By now, I think a lot of people heard about it. They divided the Chinese population into two classes, red and black. And you can kind of figure out. Red is good, black is bad. So, and the black people, why they're bad? Because they either were used to be property owners, or they think like those property owners, which is bourgeois or capitalist. So it is bad that you own something. But even if you don't own anything, but if somehow you think like those people that used to own something, that means traditional, right? A traditional way of thinking, and you're bad. You're black class. So the struggle session is for the people who classified as the black class. So why they want a struggle session? To denounce them, denounce their thoughts, denounce their ideas. And so everyone, actually, it's kind of simple. Everyone was in power has to go through the struggle session. And even the father of the today's dictator, Xi Jinping, have to go through so many struggle sessions and denounced by the Red Guards. And so if I knew earlier, I would find a photo for you that his father, there was a photo of Xi Jinping's father where one of those signs and a parade in truck around the city to be denounced. So it's just a public trial. And the only purpose is to humiliate. And you know, this one, the picture we're looking at right now, he was the governor of a province. And what he, apart from being in power, that was his crime. He has an additional crime. He has a Mao-like hairstyle. And that's why they want to cut his hair. How dare he that he wanted to have the same kind of a hairstyle of our great god, Mao.
Wow.
Wow. Oh,
there.
That's it?
There's Xi Jinping's
father.
Good
job, producer Colton.
Oh, yeah. That's wonderful. Yes.
Yeah.
And so what's his crime? Anti-party. Of course it's not. He was a communist, and it's all power struggle. That's what we need to know. It's all about power struggle. Mao wants to get rid of all of them and put his own people in.
Now, when you talk about, you know, Marxism always is going to pit people against each other. Now, China was not a society made up of many cultures, colors of skin, you know, different things. It was minute differences. So you say this bourgeois idea.
More of like ideologies?
And so even like I've heard you tell the story of a teacher you had that just liked to dress nice. And you know, just this outward appearance of looking like an external representation of ideas that were outlawed.
Yes. And exactly. It's about, in the beginning, it was about haves and have nots. If you have anything. And here's another myth. And people say, of course, those people have land and they exploit people who do not have land. Yes, there's some truth to it during the land reform. They took land from people who own land and give to the poor. But in certain areas, they were just, everybody was so poor. Everybody have a little plot of land. So what you do? You get the one that has a little bit more. You get your neighbor because your neighbor have two walks rather than one. And then that person become black class and his two walks were confiscated and shared with the other poorer people. That is the problem is with the classic Marxism. The original sin for classic Marxism is wealth. Mm. If you have stuff, you are guilty. And so later, they confiscated everything. Nobody had anything anymore. The class was gone. There's no, well, except the ruling class. But anyway, so they have to continue. They have to continue to divide people. So now they use ideology. So it's like, you may not have anything because we took all your stuff. Hey, but you're stuck with the way of thinking. And that made you continue, make you black class. And so I think most people would know today the original thing of cultural Marxism in America is whiteness, right? Mm-hmm. White people.
Especially
then your problem,
men.
You're saying is that you are born white because white means slavery, means everything. Imperialism is colonialism, everything. Same idea. Absolutely same idea.
I want to fast forward a little bit. Obviously, you ended up here in the United States. You went to school in Kentucky, ended up staying here in the United States. But it seems like in 2021, you kind of came on the scene where you showed up at a school board meeting because you saw what was happening and you knew that you couldn't be silent any longer. Is that right?
Yeah.
And so let's talk about what for decades, this wasn't like this wasn't something you were sharing, you know, and banging the drum mm-hmm. for. If I could ask kind of why is that? What did that era of your life look like?
Yes. And I have to say that once I left China, came here, I made a mistake. And of course, I think millions of other people that have similar experience as I did probably make the same mistake and said, okay, we escape communism. We come to America. There's nothing can go wrong. We escaped communism. Everything will be absolutely okay. I will live happily ever after. That is my fairy tale, and I believed in it. So mm-hmm. I paid no attention to politics for as long as I can remember. I was just busy making my American dream, you know, get a job, you know, buying a house, buying a bigger house and car and whatever. And only later I start to notice things here and there, and it just remind me. It's kind of like cultural revolution and a political correctness that we can only say this, we can't say that. And that's, to me, is cultural revolution. But still, I did not really lose my sleep over it. And so I made a mistake. And that is a huge mistake. And that is, I did not share my story, not even to my own family here. Mm. Because I want to forget it.
Sure.
It's something that I want to leave behind me and sure. just never bother thinking about it. And so I did not tell people, my coworkers, and then I hardly, because it's something I really don't want to be bothered with. I really want to forget it. And that's the mistake that I made. And that's the mistake that a lot of people like me who lived through communism, different countries, different continent, in a different time, we did not make our story heard as a warning.
Well, you changed that.
Yeah.
You changed that. You showed up at a Loudoun County, Virginia school board meeting. I want to play that for everyone real fast. And you kind of came on the scene and you've definitely turned that around.
They gave you maybe 2 minutes. I think you made the most of it.
Yes, you did. Check this out.
1 minute, sir.
We only have
1 minute. And I just rushed through and I have a few seconds to spare.
Wow.
I've been very alarmed about what's going on in our school. You are now training our children to be social justice warriors and to loathe our country and our history. Growing up in Mao's China, all this seemed very familiar. The communist regime used the same critical theory to divide people. The only difference is they use class instead of race. During the Cultural Revolution, I witnessed students and teachers turned against each other. We changed school names to be politically correct. We were taught to denounce our heritage. The Red Guards destroy anything that is not communist, old statues, books, and anything else. We are also encouraged to report on each other, just like the Student Equity Ambassador Program and the Bias Reporting System. This is indeed the American version of the Chinese Cultural Revolution. The critical race theory has its roots in cultural Marxism. It should have no place in our schools.
Wow. And they responded. People heard you and what you had to say. What happened after that?
How'd that change your life a little bit?
Yeah, actually, I thought I just went to a local school board meeting. And even that was scary to me because there are hundreds of people there. And I thought, you know, of course, everyone know what I'm talking about. And of course, it turned out the Cultural Revolution in China. And I bet that a lot of people in that room, that was their first time to heard about Cultural Revolution. And so I thought that was over. You know, I did what I did. I had no idea the following day Fox News called. And I had to make a big decision. It's really a big decision. We just went through 2020 and we saw so many conservatives were attacked, their homes burned. Mm-hmm. And it was a really scary time. And I did not have much time to make this decision. So I think the reason I said yes pretty much within like 10 minutes is that I know that it's no longer about me. If we lose this country, does it even matter that, that I can stay outside, out of the spotlight or lose my privacy or yeah. whatever? I really, in a way, it's a big decision. And in a way, it was a quick decision because I understand if we lose this country, there's nowhere else for me to run.
Right.
I came here to escape communism. And this is going to be really living through it again if we don't stop it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I have no idea that little act really lead me to where I am today. Also, I have to say little words of why I wrote the book. So I started to get invited and to talk to different groups and also on interviews like now. And the more I talk, the more I notice that people absolutely don't know. They have very little understanding of communism, and they have really hardly any idea about the Cultural Revolution. Mm-hmm. And I just realized if I have an interview 40 minutes here and have speech, 30 minutes there, I won't do it. I just would not do it. I have to write a book. I never, ever dreamed of writing a book. It's just not enter my mind. So it's, the only thing I can say is God's will. And everything worked out. I have people helping me with the book. Afterwards, everything just worked out that I got the publisher and I have the best editor. And God's will. That's the only thing I can say.
Well, we have the link down below for people to be able to get your book and your Twitter handle, X Van Fleet. It's also in the bio there at the top of that. You were interviewed by Tucker Carlson. It was an incredible interview that's pinned at the top of your Twitter feed. But the next one down, references you make this comment that in the Biden administration, the new religion is Marxism. And you make that very clear. I'm going to play a clip real quick because I want to highlight something. As your voice began to rise, it was in opposition of another movement happening in America. But instead of just haves and have-nots, they began to pit many different classes against each other. I'm going to play a quick clip, just like a refresher for people, of what was happening on the other side of the coin while you were making your statements.
Many see the slogan Black Lives Matter, or BLM, as a noble plea for equal treatment under the law. It's a cry to secure the rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness for everyone. But what does the Black Lives Matter organization actually stand for? To find out, look no further than their leaders, Alicia Garza, Opal Tometi, and Patrice Cullors. Here's Cullors in a revealing 2015 interview.
We actually do have an ideological frame. Myself and Alicia in particular are trained organizers. We are trained Marxists.
Visit the Black Lives Matter website and read the list of demands to get a sense of how deep a transformation they seek. One of those demands proclaims, quote, "We disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family structure requirement by supporting each other as extended families and villages that collectively care for one another. We can't be certain, but it's hard to believe this radical agenda is what most signed up for when they made that hashtag Black Lives Matter social media post, or that every employee, customer, or shareholder at Nike endorses a disruption of the family." Garza first coined the phrase in 2013, the day George Zimmerman was acquitted of murdering Trayvon Martin. Her friend Cullors added the hashtag and joined the words so it could travel through social media. Tometi created the digital platform Black Lives Matter capitalresearch.com. According to Robert Stilson of the Capital Research Center, the group became a self-styled global network in 2014 and a fiscally sponsored project of a separate progressive nonprofit in 2016. This evolution has helped embolden an agenda vastly more ambitious than a national defunding of police. The goals of the Black Lives Matter organization go far beyond what most people think. They're hiding in plain sight, there for the world to see. If only we read beyond the slogans and the summaries of the movement they helped to create. It's a distinction with a profound difference. Their radical Marxist agenda is bent on supplanting the basic building blocks of society, the family, replacing it with the state, and destroying the economic system that has lifted more people from poverty than any other. Theirs is a blueprint for misery, not justice. It must be rejected.
Wow, that sounds oddly familiar. I'm going
to bring up an article here. If you go to the website for Black Futures Lab, it's a venture of Black Lives founder Alicia Garza, and you click on the donate button, it'll ask you to send your money to an obscure organization, the Chinese Progressive Association. Explain that the Black Futures Lab is a fiscally sponsored project of the Chinese Progressive Association. Chinese Progressive Association. So when you see there on there, that's the donate. There's they're interwoven in some kind of a way. And probably why you were able to kind of detect, it's almost like tasting something. It's like, oh, this has this certain spice in it. Like you had a palate to discern these same movements. But in America, in that window, it was much more elaborate. It was masked and not masked, and black and white, and rich and poor, and it began to grow. What seemed like what you described before, almost overnight.
Yeah, I think now hopefully more and more people realize the words, they're playing the game of words, like Black Lives Matter. Okay, who can argue against it? Black lives do matter,
right?
Even though all life matters, but do all black lives matter? That is the question, because they don't care about the lives, the black life that lost in the inner city and gunned down by gangs and other blacks. The only matter, only the lives that matter are those they can use for their political gains. And a great leap forward is basically great leap backward. So I think for now, I think more and more people realize that the deception of communism, it always used the most beautiful slogan to carry out the worst, the evilest plan.
And exactly what you were describing about what happened to you and what you were seeing when this cultural revolution started, we're seeing that in our country. You know, they're right now they're kind of happy because, you know, who they have in power. They're like, okay, but this young group of individuals, just like they were using there in China, they used here with the Antifa that we saw here. They're kind of silent until something happens that they don't like, and then they kind of pop back up to try to control the population.
There is a clip you can find, you know, the Black Lives Matter. I can't remember his name right now, but and he also she also said that she loves the Little Red Book of Mao's.
Interesting.
Well,
they're absolutely Marxists and communists. And I think, and you know, they move on, right? You know, it started in the Black Lives Matter, and more people realize that it is a hoax, because all the money donated to them, and now what happened to the money? And the leaders, they bought mansions, and then the local chapter of BMM is suing BMM, the headquarters, right? Where's the money? But now they move on. They move on to transgender.
Yes,
this is the next big thing, and then climate. Because BMM actually already discredited itself. The movement has been discredited. So they always move on. And that's something people have to understand. And so transgender, now yesterday, Easter, they made it the transgender day of visibility. And this is evidence that people should say this is a religion. Transgender, woke, all this is Marxism. It is a religion.
Yeah. Okay. And even any kind of symbolism on the White House Easter egg, you know, festivities.
Couldn't have anything religious.
They couldn't have any kind of religious symbology tied to it, know, at all. Any signs of Christianity had to be removed to elevate LGBTQ on that day.
So as we're listening, you know, you talked a lot about power. I've heard that from the leaders of Black Lives Matter. They even wrote books about the power. And you've used power several times in this interview. Yep, exactly.
It's all a power grab.
It's all a power grab in this interview today. Yeah. Our slogan here at Flyover Conservatives is wake up. So I think this is a wake up call to people, but it's also speak up and show up.
Boy, you did.
And you did. Yes. But what are ways that we can also speak up and show up? Our listeners, what are ways they can speak up and show up to make a difference, to help to save our country so it doesn't follow that same path?
Yeah, I think the first thing, the very most important thing is to understand. And that's what you have your show to educate people. I have written the book to wake people up. I think you have to really understand. And I'm now working with a group of people. We want to come up with easy to read and easy to digest counter narratives. We need counter narratives. What is Black Lives Matter? Well, no one would disagree. Black Lives Matter.
Right.
But we have to educate them and have to come up with a counter narrative and to talk back, to fight back. So I think the understanding is the very first requirement. You can't fight something if you don't even understand it. And then we have to really help to expose and talk to people, you know, and everyone has a little circle of influence, and we have to get organized. Republicans and the conservatives in general, we don't organize. We're all individuals. We leave people alone, and that's the way it should be. But now we're fighting with communists. They organize. Mao organized the peasants that got him into power. Obama, how did he start it? He started as a community organizer. Yep. He promised those people all the good stuff. And then he got into power. What happened to those people? They are worse off than ever, just like the peasants. Same thing. But they organized. And we have to understand what we're dealing with. And In Loudoun County, that's where we started the peasant revolt, right? People showed up, and they went to the school board, and it really influenced the whole entire country. But, you know, we still have the problem. We haven't solved the problem, but fewer people show up in the school board meetings. That is something we have to understand. This is going to be a long it's not going to be something that you show up one day and then problem is solved. No, this is going to be a long term. This took the left almost a century to get us where we're today. They never sleep. They never quit. They're always organized. And of course, I always say those people they demonstrate just in the middle of the day, they probably get paid, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But they get organized. And we have to do the same. And we have to understand it's not one day. It's not 2 days. It's not even 1 year. If we have to win our country back, we have to fight constantly.
Such a great point.
I don't think the left ever takes a day off on taking this ground. And like you said, it kind of works against us because fundamental belief of being a conservative is like, you know, allow you to be in your own lane and do right. And do your own thing, your own independence. And we sort of work independently and kind of believe like, if I'm going to make my life better, I need to go to work and make my life better. Mm-hmm. And so I don't go to you asking for you to come and help make my life better. It's like, it's up to me, you know? And so it philosophically, they kind of work against each other. But this all started with you speaking out at a school board meeting. And I think in when you were seven and you look at the school system being an indoctrination mechanism, today our school system is an indoctrination system. And I think that is the fundamental place where everybody can begin taking that ground back and yes. pushing back at the lowest level in the education system, the county level, in elections, mm-hmm. every level at the most where it's closest to you.
So flyover family, share this message, share this video today. Also make sure you get She's book, go to X Van Fleet, on Twitter. And when you get there, just at the top, you'll see it's going to click. You can click on that. It's going to take you right to where you can buy the book. We'll also put the link below. Make sure you also get this out to more people. Get this to people that are in college, so they're aware of, oh my gosh, this is what's happening. This is what happened them there as well, because a lot of people have no idea what happened in China.
These are not new ideas or not untested ideas that they've never worked out good before. Go ahead.
Yeah. Can I say one thing and ask that your school, your children's school, high school and public school, to carry the library, to carry my book. Also go to your local library. And I told people that my library, my county, they carry my book. And I ask people in a neighboring Fairfax County to do the same. And ask them, all the listeners, ask your local county library to carry my my book.
That's a great idea.
Get it to as many people as possible.
We love that. We love that. She, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. Hey, Flyover family, come join us June the 27th and 28th, 2024 in Tulsa, Oklahoma. We're going to be there with Clay Clark, an amazing group of individuals that have made such a difference in so many people's lives.
Do you want to increase your production in a job? Do you want to make more sales? Do you want to own your own business? Do you want to have breakthroughs financially? The key to that is knowledge.
Clay Clark is anointed to help people in business. We've watched him over the last couple of years, and we've been blown away. He's part owner of over 160 businesses, $2.4 billion in sales.
Before politics and the Great Reset came into Clay's life, he had the number one rated Apple podcast. And he interviewed people like Anthony Robbins, Seth Godin, the top authors, the top business minds in the world. At this specific event, there was an interesting cast of characters that come from gangs to American Idol.
Some of the guests that are going to be there: Michael Levine, Colton Dixon, Peter Tompkins, John Lee Dumas, Mondo De La Vega,
and Tim Tebow. They're there to share what they've done and their breakthroughs and what their story is. And then Clay lays his map of business success, calls the path for every person to follow.
So you may be sitting there thinking, okay, I get it. What do I have to do? Go to thrivetimeshow.com. When you get there, the tickets are $250 or whatever you can afford. Yes, you got that right. $250 or whatever you can afford. You can name your price. So there are no excuses. You have to join us there. There are only a few VIP tickets left, like David said, special dinner and special time with the speakers. That is $500 while they last. So $500, only a few left if you want a VIP ticket. We want to meet these speakers as well, so we got VIP tickets.
I want to meet Tim Tebow.
I do too. The date is June the 27th and 28th, 2024 in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Go to thrivetimeshow.com to get your tickets. This is a crazy time to be alive.
Well, just in our lifetime, used to be where you'd hear your grandparents talk about how cheap gas was and stuff. And it was 75 years before, 50 years before.
And so we've seen a lot of changes since Biden took office. $700 more a month
than what you needed in January of 21 when he took office.
You might hear these kind of things and think, oh, that's overwhelming. I can't control the government. I can't control what they're doing. I can't control the spending. But we can take care of ourselves.
You want to make sure that you're buying bullion from somebody that you can trust and someone that does not charge you a commission when you go to sell.
If there's going to be a commission, have it on the front end, not the back end, when it skyrockets and now you're like, oh my gosh, look at this big, huge commission I got to pay because it's on the back end before I sell it.
You can buy an ounce of silver for $23. So this is something everybody can get into. And if silver goes to $50, if it goes to $75, if it goes to $100, all of those profits are yours. And that's happening while the dollar is buying less and less at the actual grocery store.
So you can go to flyovergold.com, fill out your information. When you do that, someone from Dr. Kirk's team will get a hold of you to set up a free consultation. It doesn't cost you any money whatsoever. Or to do the same thing, you can just call 720-605-3900. Hey, Flyover family, it is going to be a crazy year. Obviously, year of election 2024. Who knows what the future holds? But if we look back at the past, we look at what's happened, the year of elections, it's never good. So we're like, okay, what can we do as a family to prepare to take care of our family during this time?
And there's things that you can store up that are cheap and easy. You can get beans and rice, and there's prep packs, but you need a protein in the mix to sustain yourself and sustain the people that depend on you to provide for them if the supply chain is broken for any length of time.
And we truly have searched everywhere to find the best source, and we have come across one, flyovermeat.com. Non-lab grown meat, non-mRNA jabs. It's all American beef. The shelf life is actually 10 plus years.
So high quality meat that you can take care of your family no matter what happens.
That is exactly right. So go to flyovermeat.com, use promo code FLYOVER. For more great content, go to flyoverconservatives.com.